In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the role and the challenge of public health. I think it's fair to say that if you go back to the era before modern medical technology, before we had MRIs and before we had antibiotics, the kinds of tools that physicians use today, if there was an improvement in the health of people, it was in large part due to developments in public health. In recent years, particularly now that we have gotten into the time of high tech in medicine, we seem to have not paid quite so much attention to public health anymore. And some people would suggest that that was a mistake, particularly now that in the last couple of months, we've been starting to think about serious threats to public health in this country. Some of them perhaps introduced intentionally or some accidentally. Certainly within the last few years, one of the things that we've seen around the world is a resurgence in infectious disease. And then recently, we've been worried about bioterrorism. And so now we find ourselves turning to the public health infrastructure and realizing that we have really allowed it to decline, to erode in recent years. This morning in this hour focus, we'll talk a little bit about public health with two guests. Here in the studio with me, Jack McIntyre. He's Director of Community Health Nursing and Clinical Services at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. And also joining us by telephone is Dr. Quentin Young. He is a physician. He is past president of the American Public Health Association. He was for a number of years, between 72 and 81, chairman of medicine at Cook County Hospital in Chicago, and has been now for some time a very vocal proponent of national health. He's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk with the two guests, you're certainly welcome to call us and ask questions, make comments. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have that toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use that number, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, here in the studio, Mr. McIntyre. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
And here on the telephone with us, Dr. Young. Hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us.
It's a pleasure.
I think maybe to begin, we really ought to talk a little bit about what we mean by public health. I mean, what really that is. And it may be that different people will have different ideas or some people will have no idea. Maybe I'll start with Dr. Young. Here, one of the things about you I mentioned was that you have served as president of the American Public Health Association. So what really is the mission of public health, or what is it about?
Well, the best definition I'm acquainted with, there are several, but this one captures it. It's what society as a whole does collectively together to enhance the health status of a people. That obviously means that it's a function that's not individual but is general, that it's done by government by and large. And I just want to take the moment to extend your very good analysis of the role of public health over recent centuries. My favorite starting point is that in the last century and a half, since the middle of the 19th century, human life in the U.S. has doubled from roughly 40 years life expectancy then to nearly 80 years right now. And as you pointed out vividly, that is almost entirely the work product of public health triumphs. Things like separation of drinking water from sewerage, very big, mass immunization, early prenatal care, clean air, clean water, safe food, all public health activities. And I think you could say without cavil that doubling of the life expectancy is unprecedented in all of human experience from the very beginning. And yes, latterly, as you pointed out, there's been a sense that the thing I do as a doctor, give penicillin or operate on hearts as other of my colleagues do, is the secret of good health. And of course it isn't. We've let our public health system get into disrepair, and we're having a wake-up call now, and I'm sure we'll be talking about it.
Yeah. Well, let me then turn here to Jack McIntyre in the studio, and I don't know what you would like to add. Certainly, it sounds from the way that Dr. Young has defined it, And very nicely, in just a few words, you realize that here we're talking about an area that's extremely broad, everything from, let's say, educational efforts directed at people to try to persuade them that smoking's not good, all the way over to making sure that people who otherwise couldn't afford it could get vaccinations for their children. I mean, this really covers an enormous amount of ground.
Yes, it does. I think one of the real important things when you think about public health is that the people within the public that you're serving, whatever government agency it is, need to be actively involved. And it kind of reminds me of the Chinese proverb that I've read in the past is that, tell me, I forget, show me, I remember, involve me, I understand. Public health requires public participation. It's not something that a group here, government agency here or there, can do without having the support of the constituents.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also, I think, Dr. Young, makes me think about the fact that in recent years, it seems that we have shifted away, as we think of why people get sick. It seems that in recent years, what we've done is that we have gone more and more to a mindset that says, if people get sick, it's their fault. It's their fault they get sick, and it's their responsibility to get well. And somehow that's the perhaps older mindset, the one that was more prevalent in the time of when public health was very strong and making a big impact, was, well, yes, but that there's really much more to it than that. And the conditions under which people live, often conditions that they don't have a lot of control over, that does indeed have a big impact on people's health. And it's not always simply a matter of saying to somebody, look, you know what to do, you know what you should be doing, you do it, and you'll be healthy.
That's an excellent point, because I think it underscores a profound ideological and even political reality in our country, and you stated it very well. Public health, major premise, and all of its activities presume that you have a societal problem, that the water that everybody drinks is a danger, if not pure, to everybody, that contagion next door can affect your house tomorrow, and therefore it is a forced group effort, as you've said, and the notion that the distortion that individual responsibility resides in personal responsibility for health is a misnomer. Of course, there's lifestyle habits like smoking and excessive use of alcohol and even overeating, which is emerging as perhaps our biggest addiction, that are clearly personal decisions. But it is a societal responsibility to create conditions for people to correct those problems, whether it's smoking. We're in the midst, are we not, as a nation, of grappling with the tobacco epidemic and the consequent dreadful health outcomes. And that takes a strategy, for example, to end the rush of young girls, literally girls, age 11 and 12, are the fastest growing group of smokers, new smokers. That can't be done by saying to the 11-year-old, your social responsibility is to not smoke. Of course you say that, but you have to do a lot more. As a society, using public health efforts, as Mr. McIntyre just pointed out, to educate and to constantly change the reality. If I may, I'd like to introduce my thoughts on why public health is in such disarray.
Sure.
At the beginning of the 20th century, and here's the other comment. It turns out that up until mid-20th century, about post-World War II, public health enjoyed enormous popularity because people could see the results, not only better life expectancy, but better life. And the public supported vigorously all of the rules and regulations that were necessary to make it happen. Meat inspection, compulsory immunization, water purification, fluoridation. I don't want to give the endless list, but these are the real findings and applications of public health that the public really liked. And that was a period, that same a century before 1950, when there was general growth and development of the public health infrastructure at the local level, the state level, and nationally. And we'll get into those institutions that emerged. But what happened in 1950? I argue three things happened. One, paradox, public health was a victim of its own success. People really believed that the public health problems, notably infections, were conquered. The transformation that took place in American life when polio, which was the dread annual reaper of death and paralysis of particularly children, was made to disappear by a vaccine. Smallpox was literally ended this is probably the most important source of death to humans in the preceding centuries, was eliminated. So people, understandably but wrongly, said, it's all over. Celebrate and the doom of public health. And they started to underfund it and degrade it. The second thing that happened was always there, but became very manifest. If you think a moment, all public health officials, whether you're talking about the Surgeon General or the Director of Public Health in this state or the Commissioner of Health in Chicago, each of these people are appointed by an elected public official, subordinate to him or her, and therefore requiring, at the end of the day, to support that public official's health policy. They can object, but if they persist in their objection, they get to lose their job and they're replaced by somebody more malleable. That's an undesirable situation, an area that needs independence, and it's the subordination of the health officials, and many of them are outstanding. Our current Surgeon General is a giant, and yet you notice he's, at least in the first few weeks of this anthrax threat, he was muzzled. You always saw former Governor Thompson, who knows nothing about the issue, as the only spokesman, and David Satcher was muzzled. That's not a figure of speech. He was not allowed to speak. Latterly, they've given him a little more leeway, but that's a beautiful example of the subordination of public health policy and leadership to the political process. The last thing is very interesting and has a lot of pertinence to our current situation. Following World War II, of course, we went into a phase where we were a giant superpower, worried mostly about the Soviet Union, but also other enemies, and we shifted almost all of our new energies in public health to bacteriological science and literally anticipating bacteriological warfare, bioterrorism, if you please. And there was a sharp reduction in the funding of public health facilities at the same time. And the irony is that a half century later, we have a great capacity to ourselves to develop lethal organisms. In other words, we could, if we were vile enough and uncivilized, and I don't think we are, use these weapons ourselves. But we haven't learned how to defend ourselves. Witness the anthrax excitement. And it's very hard to solve the problem by a bacteriological research alone. I guess I'd close by saying those three elements brought public health down, and we find ourselves in a sudden panic as we have new demands on the system. And I'm pleading that we don't make those mistakes again.
Let me hear real quick, and I'm sure Jack McIntyre would like to add on there, but I'm thinking for people who might have tuned in, I should say who the guests are here one more time. Dr. Quentin Young speaking with us by telephone. He's a physician. He's past president of the American Public Health Association. For a number of years was chairman of medicine at Cook County Hospital in Chicago. And actually, Dr. Young, you're still practicing, aren't you?
I do. It's some would say it's time to hang it up, but I enjoy practice so much. I'm 3 days a week. I go in and join my very, very intelligent younger partners in the practice of internal medicine.
Very good. And here in the studio with us, Jack McIntyre, who is Director of Community Health Nursing and Clinical Services at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. For people who are listening, questions, comments are welcome. If you'd like to join us, you can call here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Mr. McIntyre, would you like to add anything on to what Dr. Young said?
Well, I think he's entirely right. One of the other things, you know, in regarding to the victim of our own success, I think one of the things that public health had to grapple with, that as the communicable diseases, particularly the childhood communicable diseases, were being eliminated, we looked for, okay, what do we do next? And some people had the foresight to look at chronic illnesses, because as people lived longer, we were getting more people with chronic illnesses, and you know, how do you prevent those? And so that's been an evolutionary process, and we're finding new things every day, a number of genetic diseases that are in the forefront now that we didn't know even back in the 50s, and those kinds of things, and how do we address those problems. So I think that, yes, that the public health was a victim of its own success, and then once they had reached that, you know, where do you go from there?
Mm-hmm. I want to revisit, if I may, David, Mr. McIntyre's earlier very important point about the civic, the public participation in public health activities. He's absolutely right about nothing without that. Unless you have a public that is energized and supportive and cooperative and indeed demanding of the on the system, you will not get where you want to go. And you, I'm sure you both of you know, you are in a county where there's been an extraordinary example of this kind of activism, literally by a group called Friends of Public Health. That the, it's kind of hard to believe that at the end of the 20th century, you still didn't have in parts of your county, Champaign County, basic public health services, and it took a citizen initiative to vote it on the ballot and make it come to pass. And I'm at once thrilled by the vigor of the leadership that made that happen, but also appalled that in a county that hosts world-class university and, you know, is renowned for its scientific grounding, not to mention its civic grounding, that they would have to fight at that late date for elementary public health services. And it's a good example of our plight. Champaign County is not the only county in America that doesn't have basic public health services, and it's certainly beyond the absence of basic services. There are tremendous deficits in our public health capacity. Many health departments don't have computers. They literally can't communicate in a modern way. They very few have an email capacity, and that's also very serious in our present. Let me make my point, and I'm sure Mr. McIntyre will affirm, surveillance, the essence of prevention is detection. The way we stay as good as we're doing with all our defects is that the Centers for Disease Control are the most advanced system for detecting beginnings of epidemics or outbreaks that we want to get our arms around. And without that defense, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention is the federal government's Atlanta-based entity that we all depend on. And it's our first line of defense. And it's, would you believe they work in buildings where the roofs leak? And while they are enjoying enormous support at this moment, it's never been adequate to a nation of our wealth and multiple problems.
We have a caller to bring into the conversation. Why don't we do that and not make them wait? They are on line number one in Champaign, right here. Hello.
Yes, thank you. having been involved in that fight to get the public health district established in this county, I've got to say the battle has still continued. Even though we won that battle initially, the Republican County Board continued to fight it and did everything they could to keep from implementing it. And then the last act of the Republican County Board before they were replaced as a majority by the Democrats was to deny an increase in the budget before the tax caps that were voted in completely, you know, locked down the possibility of adequately funding the county board, health district. And so they're still somewhat hobbled. And, you know, it's just been a continuing battle here.
Yes, that's true. tonight they're going. The county board will meet to vote on the budget. It's the amount of money that they've been able to. The Democrats would like to add to the budget is not completely adequate, but it certainly is more than what the Republicans would like to add to it. And I would just say that any of you hearing this, you know, it's not too late to call your representative to the county board and tell them of your support of the health department and what they can do in the county. We're trying very hard. We get the calls every day from people in the county who need either dental care primarily or even home visiting so that they can continue to live in their homes to assist with medication management, doing such simple things as a blood draw that doesn't take very long to do and that for us, but for the person to get out of their home with their disability, it's an all-day event, and then they're exhausted at the end of the day. Those kinds of things that the county health department, the county board of health, would like to keep to reinstate and keep going for us.
You know, David, this is obviously a dispiriting conversation that such elementary things that come very close to what defines a civilized society should be in debate. But it's fair to generalize. I'm at a distance from Champaign County here in Chicago. That over the centuries of the development of public health, every public health discovery and advance did confront some vested interest, whether it was finding out workplace hazards and requiring higher protections for workers, or, as we've been talking about, water and sewerage control. Somebody has to change their way of doing things, and there is a cost associated. And it's fair to say that every one of these things have been resisted. Sometimes, you know, for very sectarian reasons, fluoridation, which is such a spectacular solution to the problem of dental caries in children and adults, has been fought across this country by different groups because of special interests. Immunizations, likewise. I'm not arguing there are no controversies around surrounding these reforms, but that the resistance has always been there, and as I hear from the recent caller, that it continues. Mm-hmm. And I'm just arguing that this time around, as a nation, we have to find a way to unify around a strong, strong public health system, including, in my book, a system operating in a country that has universal health care. Because, as I tried to say earlier, I'll say it one more time, health is not, in that sense, a personal matter. Contagion or social dependency, these become societal burdens.
Our guest here this morning in this part of Focus 580, Dr. Quentin Young, he is the past president of the American Public Health Association, continues to practice medicine in Chicago. He was for a number of years chairman of medicine at Cook County Hospital. Also here in the studio, Jack McIntyre from the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. He is the director of community health nursing and clinical services. We're talking about public health. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I have another caller here I want to get on to in a second, but what I want to do here is give Jack McIntyre the opportunity to talk for a couple of minutes about the public health district in Champaign-Urbana. As we were talking before the show, I suspect that there are many people who live in Champaign-Urbana who either don't even have any idea the public health district exists, or if they do and you ask them, well, what do they do there, they really wouldn't have much of an idea. What does the public health district of Champaign-Urbana do?
Okay. We have a number of programs that are divided in kind of groups. We have an environmental health division that does all the food inspection, water, all of those environmental kinds of things, lead assessments in homes, that sort of thing. We have another one called community health planning and education. They do looking at the statistical data regarding the health status of the whole county and do some analysis of that, and also do education in a variety of areas. They do education regarding tobacco cessation. They work with schools, community organizations, and in injury prevention. One of those particularly has to do with the Safe Kids Coalition. In aside from, you know, just that, we try to partner with other groups in the community to provide a number of these services. We do in the nursing and clinical services. We actually have some clinics, immunization, well child, school physical, immigration physical, STD clinics. We have a very active program for providing in-home nursing services to seniors and the disabled to help them age in place so that they are less likely to go to a nursing home. For every one of the seniors we keep out of a nursing home for a year, we save, because of most of these clients are low-income clients, we save the state probably about $35,000 a year in Medicaid funding for nursing home placement. And so when you look at it from that perspective, you know, we're actually saving ourselves some money for that. In the we have grants in genetics, we have grants in diabetes, we have grants in hearing and vision screening in the schools in the two cities. We have another section that's that has the WIC program, which is the Women, Infants, and Children program, supplemental food program for low-income women who are pregnant, breastfeeding, and then for children up to age 5. We have a case management unit that helps to monitor low-income women when they're pregnant to make sure that they get all of the needed services that that they should have to have a healthy outcome in their pregnancy. And those are some of the major things that we do in our health district.
And where does the money come from to operate the health district?
A lot of it comes from within the health district, which is the two townships of Cunningham and City of Champaign townships, which are almost congruent with the two cities. And then we have a number of grants that are from the state. Now, almost all the grants that we get from the state are for county services as well. Those services go into the county. And some of the grants that we get are multi-county. We have one for breast and cervical cancer prevention, and that one is multi-county. It includes McLean County and Vermilion County as well as Champaign.
Okay. Let's talk with another caller here. This person is in Champaign on our line number 2. Hello.
Hi. I was calling. I'm in a same situation as the previous caller in terms of being somebody who has worked for the past 5 years to try to ensure that we have public health services for our county residents. And I was interested with in what Dr. Quentin Young said earlier about the subordination of public health to the political process. And certainly we have seen that to be true locally. And what Jack McIntyre was talking about a few minutes ago regarding the county board vote tonight on funding for public health is very much a result of the local political process. Many of us in the community are advocating for the full funding for the health department. The board tonight will be voting on approving 150 of the 290 some thousand dollars that the health department wanted. And I guess one of the points that I wanted to make is that the services that are being proposed, the new services that would be created, the child dental care services, the need is just indisputable in Champaign County. But the main point that I wanted to make is that the other service, the home nurse visits, that the Board of Health would like to reinstate for county residents, those services are very important in terms of meeting current needs of county residents. In Champaign County, we have 10 rural townships that have been declared by the federal government as medically underserved areas. And that designation is a result of two factors: poverty in those communities, as well as distance from healthcare providers. And so the home nurse visits are very vital right now, and county residents would benefit from those. But I guess I was wondering if Jack McIntyre and Dr. Quentin Young could maybe comment on the second aspect. One of the things that we're trying to say is that the home nurse visits would require the hiring of public health nurses to meet immediate needs. But those public health nurses would also be a very important investment for Champaign County in the event that we would ever have a disaster or an emergency. Because, in fact, public health nurses are the frontline people who would respond to disasters or emergencies. And I just wondered if Jack McIntyre or Dr. Quentin Young could sort of talk about the importance of public health personnel, not just in providing current services, but in terms of addressing emergencies or disasters. And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. I don't know who wants to go first. Mr. McIntyre, you want to go first?
Well, I think in Champaign County, that the public health nurses would be on the front line of any kind of, say, a bioterrorism attack, that sort of thing, to assist in a number of ways, identifying people who are greatest risk, who need what kind of services the fastest, those kinds of things. And they're very key. If we don't have the number of people available to us to do that, then that's going to be more difficult to respond and maybe even be a contributor to the morbidity and mortality that would occur in an emergency kind of situation.
Dr. Young, you want to add something?
Yeah, I do indeed, David. The caller highlights one of the great resources that were developed under public health, namely the public health nurse. Not too many years ago, newborns were visited invariably by where they had a good health department. Apparently, something that's just happening in Champaign County. But I can remember in Chicago how vigorously the public health nurse played a role in controlling infant and maternal mortality by literally home visits and instruction and taking the precautions that would change the rate of illness and death from the contagious diseases, accident prevention, nutrition. It was just a superb way of transmitting knowledge, scientific skills to a public, and I think the earlier point about the changed spectrum of illnesses that we now confront as we have an aging population, the chronicity of diabetes, hypertension, arthritis, to name a few, these are debilitating diseases that need support systems to keep a person in their home, in the community. The costliest thing you can do is take such a person and put them in a $3,000 or $4,000 a month nursing home. Not to mention the often inhumanity and isolation that costly solution brings. We have to return to community, and public health is one of the central features of its essence. I tried to make that point when you asked me to define it, that it is what a total society does. It is in the best traditions of our religious and political beliefs of being your brother's keeper, viewing the whole society as, at some level, the responsibility of any civic group. So I look forward to a rebirth of that home-directed, community-based service. It's very much in attenuation and disarray. The nursing profession as a whole has suffered desperately in this last 20 years of disarray in the healthcare system as a whole. I'm speaking of the corporate delivery of healthcare and the effort to cost cut and maximize profits have all but destroyed the larger nursing profession. An earlier casualty was the public health nurse for other reasons. And to answer the question directly, I think we need the strongest, largest expansion of this capacity, it would not only be decent public health, but it would save the society literally millions, if not billions, of dollars.
Yeah. We've certainly, as we have discussed, one of the things that we have seen in past years is a resurgence of infectious disease. We've seen some things that we knew before that have been making a comeback, like tuberculosis. We've seen new diseases that we think probably had existed somewhere in the world but were localized. And then as people became much more mobile, suddenly we realized how easily they could spread. We've even seen non-infectious diseases like West Nile. We've seen it now here in the United States, and something that until a couple of years ago when it was first reported in New York, no one had ever reported it in the United States before.
Yeah.
So we know we've got these things to contend with, and I think a lot of people would argue that our first line of defense really is going to be our state and local public health agencies. And they are saying, now you're turning to us, you're expecting us to do this important work. We don't really have the resources. The administration has talked about new funding, hundreds of millions of dollars, but it seems like that's not enough. I think the Bush administration has talked about $300 million this year, additional money for state and local public health programs. And the people who are dealing with things like the anthrax threat that we've seen here in the last few weeks are saying we already have spent hundreds of millions of dollars dealing with that. What's the funding picture look like? And if there is some additional funding forthcoming from the government, is that really going to be enough?
Well, may I take the first bite?
Yeah, please. Sure.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We're dreadfully underfunded. One way of looking at it, we have a huge health expenditure in this country. The last year for which we have final numbers, 1999, we spent as a nation $1.4 trillion. That's $1,400 billion. That's $4,200 for every person in the country on health. Of that huge amount, less than 2% went for all public health functions. I'm talking about state and local health departments. I'm talking about the Center for Disease Control federally and the National Institutes of Health. It is an astounding disproportion considering the benefits investments in public health yield in life expectancy, quality of life, freedom from preventable diseases. So, on the gross side, it's a tiny fraction of the money we allocate in this country to health. Beyond that, as you suggested in your questioning, the amounts available are not enough. And you have 3,400 counties, you have 50 states the last time we counted, and we have a huge federal responsibility. The kinds of monies we're talking about, given our overall capacity, are trivial, certainly not huge. And the last thing I'd say, in these proposals that are coming from the Bush administration, there's the hugest possible emphasis, for obvious reasons, on bio-warfare, bio-terror protection. Now, that's very exciting. The anthrax tragedies killed several people and exposed hundreds of more. I'd be the last person to minimize that event. But when all is said and done, it is trivial compared to huge challenges on the infectious disease side, AIDS. You mentioned new things like West Nile, Hantavirus, Ebola fever. These are words that are not familiar to most of the listeners, but these are all very dangerous developments. Let me point out that the biggest single infectious disease killer is not AIDS. It's tuberculosis. 3 million people worldwide die from TB annually. It's estimated by the people who know what it takes to control TB that an investment of about $5 to $10 billion worldwide would do to TB what we were able to do with smallpox, eliminate it. When are we going to, as a people, and indeed in cooperation with other nations, meet those challenges rather than react to brief terrorist threats, important as they may be?
Anything, Jack, you want to add to that?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. You know, when you mentioned about in the 50s we were the victim of our own success, one of the things that probably had been done then. It was really an active, very active effort toward eliminating those same childhood communicable diseases throughout the world. We were conquering TB. You know, why wasn't there a greater effort then? And we wouldn't be having the numbers die in the world due to TB that we have today. Before, when the antibiotics were much more, the longer they're used, of course, the greater the chances are the tubercular organism to develop resistance to it. So, you know, sooner things were, it should have been a very broad worldwide effort to eliminate TB at that time, as opposed to now that we have TB organisms that are resistant to a lot of the antibiotics that were, in some instances, almost very desperate about how's this person going to be treated because of the resistance of the organism. And so it's really complicated things much more.
We have about 5 minutes left, and we have one, I think actually two callers here. We'll try to get them in the time that remains. We'll go first to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I did read in the paper about the county board meeting tonight, and I was intrigued at the juxtaposition between the request for funding for dental care in the county for children and a county board member complaining that the money was going to come out of road work, money for road work, which the county road work people said they didn't need. And at the same time in the paper, I don't know if it was today, yesterday or whether the day before, but there have been a couple of anti-abortion letters talking about how we have the right to life and how we need to protect innocent children and unborn children. It seems to me that what we should be doing is protecting the children who are already here, and that's what public health is doing. It's also protecting, as you said, the people who are elderly. It seems to me that we need to be standing up and saying, hey, if we really care about human beings, what we should do is be doing is funding public health adequately. And roads are important, but I haven't noticed that the roads are in terrible shape in Champaign County, and I do get out there. And but my other comment, too, is it seems to me from watching the difficulties of getting the county public health department established that was that part of the opposition came from farmers who whose large amounts of farmland were being taxed. Is there some way to fund things like this so that residences are taxed, or so it's based on the number of people that are being served in an area as opposed to land?
I don't know. I'm not sure that either of our guests is probably the guy to answer that question. I don't know.
Well, we're at the end of our time. Thanks for those eloquent remarks. Amen. As to the last question, it is a technical one. Our tax structure, I think, in many ways, whether it's for school or education or for public health, is very regressive. It taxes property owners separately. We need to meet all of these things. The one unthinkable, a progressive income tax where people participate according to their ability to pay. That would solve these problems overnight.
It seems like that it would be the kind of thing that would have to be addressed by the state legislature. Yeah. It would require it would require change in state law.
Yes, it would.
Yeah. We're almost at the point here where we're ending up, are going to end up out of time. I think we have another caller here, and I'd like to try to get him in Chicago on line four.
Thank you. Are other countries doing better, or are they all worse than ours? I was just wondering if any information is about on the other countries that benefit to have public health.
Well, I can answer, and I'm sure Mr. McIntyre can as well. Emphatically, yes, other countries do better by the usual criteria: life expectancy, infant mortality, prevention of preventable disease, and on down. And countries, no country, of course, has our huge national income per capita. And it's interesting that third world countries for obvious reasons, rely on public health far more than they do on what you could call the therapeutic health system. And some of them have data that approach ours, that some of the best-run public health systems in the third world, poverty nations, have infant mortality that is close to what ours is here.
That's true.
Where I think probably that we're at the point where we're going to have to finish. Two things I want to do before we go, I guess one thing I wanted to mention is for people who are here in Champaign-Urbana, if they're interested in finding out any more information about the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District services offered and so forth, can they just call?
Yes, they can call. The number is 352-7961. And if you want to talk to me, that's fine. There are other personnel who can field questions as well, but if it's an environmental question, I'll probably send you over to Environmental Health, and that number is 373-7900.
All right. And I also know that for people who are interested maybe in a little bit more of a national perspective on public health, one thing that they could do would be to go to the website. If you have internet access, you can go to the website of the American Public Health Association. That might be one place that you could start. It's an easy address. It's www.APHA for American Public Health Association, APHA.org.
Could I mention... You have an enormous resource in your own county with the Friends of Public Health and the
yes.
Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. I'm acquainted with them firsthand. Their number is 352-6533.
Okay. Well, there we must leave it with our thanks to our two guests, Dr. DeQuentin Young. Thank you very much for talking with us today. We appreciate it.
Very much.
He's a physician.
Good to hear you again, sir.
Among other things, is past president of the American Public Health Association. Here in the studio with me, Jack McIntyre. He's director of community health nursing and clinical services at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very much.